Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast, where we have been deeply invested, in...
I think we're the only people who think that's hilarious every time.
I think it's hilarious. In this great investing strategy developed by Ben Graham and Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett, and carried on by fabulous investors around the world, 90 years of massive success. Creating generational wealth for thousands and thousands of people who follow this kind of investing. We're trying to make sure you guys all understand the advantages of it and what you need to have in order to do it well.
That's the thing. Right. How the heck does one do such a thing?
And one of the things that's good to do is to listen to the masters. When you have a chance to go sit at the master's knee, and get wisdom from a great master of something you're studying, you take advantage of that, right? And so we get to go sit at Charlie Munger's knee. Charlie just had his annual meeting, and he's 98 years old. We don't know how many more of these he's going to get, but probably not an infinite number, right? So we take advantage of it. And by the way, you can take advantage of it too. It's on YouTube or it's on Yahoo. It's on somewhere. Where can they find it?
Yeah, Yahoo Finance broadcasted it, and so it's on YouTube. If you just put in Munger Daily Journal 2022, it'll come up. And there are also transcripts all over the internet. If you put in transcript, people have transcribed it already. So it's really nice to just, as you said, listen to the master, even though... In general, like both he and Buffett say a lot of the same stuff every year at their annual meetings. I think it's really, really nice to just listen, even if it's the same. Listen, and then there's always a bunch of stuff that isn't the same. And that's what we're going to talk about.
Stuff that isn't the same. Becky Quick jumped right into a bunch of questions about China. There's a sort of a... I don't know. There's a practical question, a pragmatic question about China. Will the Chinese Communist Party confiscate the wealth of all the capitalists in China? Mm. That was the first question. And Charlie basically is saying everybody's going to look at it differently. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. In his view, he doesn't think they will. And that we're getting really a lot more value in China than any place else in the world, perhaps, and that other companies like Sequoia, one of the leading VCs in the world, is doing the same thing, going to China. So basically, Charlie just said, I don't think it's a problem.
Yeah. He said that I feel about Russia the way you're talking about China, essentially, about the great risk of investing in either China or Russia. He's saying he doesn't invest in Russia. So I can't criticize people who don't invest in China. But he says, quote, I just reached a different conclusion. So I think what he's saying generally, and there were probably five or six questions around China, what China's doing, the combined risk of government potentially confiscating, potentially having... security issues with the West, potentially having conflict, and of course, human rights abuses. And he just kind of kept saying the same thing over and over. We invested because it was cheaper than the US. And because he said, quote, if you hold a depreciating currency, that's losing purchasing power. And on balance, we prefer the risks we have to those we're avoiding, end quote. So I took it as he's saying the dollar is riskier than investing in China. And he was able to get some deals in China. So that's where he went.
I think it's more than that, honestly.
You think it's more than that?
Yeah, I think Charlie is saying that he admires China very much. He admires the leadership in China. And that he admires what they've done to a country of a billion people in an unprecedented short period of time. And that they couldn't have done it without the sort of top-down authoritarian regime that they have, of restricting news, of demanding that everybody in the borders of China become Han Chinese. They're just out to set up the country differently than other people. And Charlie's basically like, hey, I think we have to get along in the world. Everybody doesn't have to do it our way. They can do it other way. We're not perfect. We don't walk on water. We shouldn't expect that of other people either.
Yeah. He really kind of blew it off, the massive problems that China has with human rights abuses. And a lot of people choose not to invest in China because of that. And I'm one of them. I don't own any Chinese companies, and I've decided not to because I have severe issues with the way they're handling that.
I think it's one of the most interesting questions you can have as an investor. I'm reminded, I hope this isn't too far afield. I'm reminded of a couple times I've been in Africa riding across different parts of Africa. And sort of here I am, rich guy, right? And I'm spending a lot of money to be on horseback and be all primitive and everything. And riding through Africa, coming on to a village where the village has been hired by our safari leader to take care of the horses and take care of the big house built back by the British in 1919 or something. And so here are maybe 60 women employed in the house full time and 60, 80 men, 60. And
in a house?
Mm-hmm. I remember now people are coming in from overseas and going on.
Oh, so it's more safari. Like a hotel. Okay.
It's a bit hotelish. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. It's an amazing 19th century
guest
B&D.
House kind of. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Sort of thing.
Okay.
And then there's 60, 80 guys who are employed handling horses, and the men are paid $2 a day and the women are paid $1. So is this, exploitation of people? Is a ridiculously low amount of money to pay someone. I mean, these people are living in mud huts. They have to tend their own gardens. I mean, we went into one of the huts and visited one of the women that just had a baby. And I mean, they're living in the same conditions.
Colonial building that was taken on land taken from them when the colonists came in.
Sure. So how do you feel about that? How do you feel about this entrepreneur who came from England and is now employing people in this village? Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? And I'll tell you what, that is, if you think that's a simple black and white question, I think you have not understood the problem.
Yeah, I hear
because
you.
Because the problem is Kenya has 40% unemployment. If these guys, I mean, this village is so fortunate to have a patron, if you will, who is there to protect them, to make sure that they have enough to eat, to make sure that they have jobs, to make sure that they are, under his umbrella of protection, very paternal, 100% paternal, very aristocratic, classist. Hmm. You might even say, maybe it's even racist, although I don't know if the race would matter at all. It's just poverty, So are you okay with that? Or do you think, oh no, we should never be involved with that? And then those people go starve. Right? I mean, it's just not simple. It is. Do you think it's simple?
I don't think it's simple. I agree that it's not simple. I'm trying to figure out how to relate this to China, but I think we'll get there. I think with those situations, I mean, what people talk about, of course, is the hundreds of years of subjugation and colonialism that have created that situation and what could have happened if the colonialists hadn't come in, and that maybe without them, people who are indigenous could rebuild. So that's the back and forth.
Wouldn't the answer to that be, well, that's all water under the bridge? So what?
No, if they left now, this is why people are being killed white people are being killed in Africa over the land.
Now.
Yeah.
So if they leave, okay, so he leaves. In other words, it would be the least courageous thing in the world to just leave. I mean, hey, I'm out of here. Adios. Have a good life. Enjoy Kenya.
Well, who cares about his courageousness or lack of courageousness?
Well, I think it takes a great deal of courage to do the opposite. I think that's the whole point is, or that's one of the major points is that to go into a place and be accused of exploitation when what you know you're doing, or at least from his point of view, I had dinner with this guy for many, 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 many nights in a row, right? I probably spent a month of dinners with him. And ultimately he was murdered by jealous tribesmen.
I was saying that totally randomly out of news reports, but this is somebody who was actually killed.
He was lured out away from other protection on a horse and was ambushed by a bunch of Samburu warriors with AK-47s.
Wow.
And his body laid there apparently for a couple of days before somebody flew over and noticed a horse was laying there on the ground and called back in. He would go into the bush for days at a time and nobody'd hear from him. He'd come back. He'd been doing it for 30 years. So he had established a very deep relationship with the Maasai tribe, and the Samburu are often competitive. And these people are in a very terrible situation. Modern technology has resulted in dropping precipitously the birth death rate. And as a result, they're overpopulating their land. They're farmers and graze. They graze cattle. That's how they make a living. And they're out of land. And here's this white guy who 30 years ago put together a syndicate and bought up 40 or 50,000 acres of land owned by other Europeans that had just been barbed wired, fenced, and let run down. And he tore out all the fences. He let the animals roam through it. He opened up enormous amount of grazing to the herds of wild animals that are there. He did a wonderful thing for Kenya, and people want to go and see it and bring money into Kenya. And the Samburu naturally want that land.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think saying he did land. A wonderful thing for Kenya is a pretty big judgment there, because obviously a lot of people think he didn't do a wonderful thing for Kenya. So that's why it's complicated, right? Like, as you started out saying, it's not easy.
I don't know
how
you could say that he, you know, taking land from other Europeans that had been just absolutely trashed and fenced and turning it into open space isn't a wonderful thing for Kenya. How would that be a bad judgment? Now, I can see that.
I don't know the details of this. You are telling me everything about it.
Okay. All right. So there's terrible judgments all the way along. I guess the whole point of this is that it's very difficult to avoid value judgments as an investor. If you want to invest in Africa, in Kenya, Argentina, Brazil, you know, New Zealand, China, how do you square your values with countries where the values aren't the same, or there is vast gaps in wealth? I mean, how do you square that up? And one way to do it is to just put your head in the sand. Stick your head in the sand and don't think about it. Or you could just invest wherever you want, right? That's one way to do it.
That's pretty much the way most people do it. Yeah.
That's the way most people do it. So if you have an international bond fund or an international stock fund, guess what? You own pieces of all of that.
Yeah.
Right? You just don't want to know you do. Or you can just simply say, I'm not investing in anything that I don't absolutely 1,000% think is fantastic. And you find yourself owning Facebook. And it's a huge controversy. Or you find, right? Or Amazon. And more huge controversy.
Right.
Or,
as we've constantly said, there's no perfect company. There's no beautiful, amazing perfection in the most, you know, perfect, unsullied country.
I mean, isn't there something in the Bible that world. Just says, if you're living in a glass house, don't throw rocks?
Yeah.
I mean, right? I mean, maybe that should apply here. Don't be so critical of everything and cut some slack and realize that there is, you know, life is rough. Life is a rough place, and it is tough for people to make it and to, you know, to not be in their shoes and then make all kinds of judgment calls about what's going on there is a rather dangerous enterprise morally, you know? And that's why most religions have some sort of admonition against being so critical and so judgmental that you can't allow somebody different than you to operate.
Yeah, but that's on a like moral level, not on a what to invest in level, like an interpersonal level versus like, here's what I'm literally going to support with my money. I think for me, I'm not so much about forgiveness when it comes to what I'm going to literally support with my money. I would like to know that it's going to stuff that is creating good things in the world that I want to grow. So it's important to me that I'm comfortable with those things. And I know it's important to you as well. So all these people who invest all across the world, regardless of whatever's happening, in my opinion, are not, they're not doing this kind of investing. They probably own 1,000 different little pieces of things. And they're really just looking for payout quickly, probably within 3 to 6 months. So
I guess for me, and I think to a certain degree for Charlie, is you sort of decide you're going to allow there to be white cats and black cats in the world, and you're okay with investing in them as a moral decision. I mean, you just...
What does that mean?
It means that you're okay with things being different than the way you would do them.
Oh. Huh.
So
I don't think Charlie thinks that. I think he definitely thinks it's okay for things to be different than how he would do them. He said that lots of times in the talk. I don't think he puts his money in things that he thinks are terrible at all.
I don't think he does either.
I don't know what the white cat black cat
means. Where do you draw the line terrible? What do you mean by
that?
Well,
that is like the life question, right?
And I guess the point here, you guys, is that we want you to make those decisions for yourself, not have somebody else make them for you. And the first step in that process is to realize those questions are, they exist. They exist. So, for example, we were just talking about a safari guy exploiting tribal people in Kenya. How is that different than McDonald's exploiting people that don't have real lots of options for where to work and paying them $12 an hour? How's that different? Is $12 an hour as good in America as a dollar a day is in Kenya? Which one gets you a better life?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So these are wonderful questions.
And they're wonderful questions.
Ducking them is, I think, cowardly, honestly. I think a lot of people duck them because they don't have the courage to face up to their own contradictions. And you're going to have contradictions in the world. You're going to have places where there's no perfect answer. And I think investing is a place where you can confront that, or you can just stick your head in the sand. And as much as I love Jim Cramer for so much of what he does, I like the guy. He is a stick-your-head-in-the-sand guy at Mad Money. He does not want to confront the morals of a company and their operations at all in any way. And you can see why. These questions are difficult. And when you start to weigh in on them, you might find yourself very uncomfortable about where your money should go.
Yeah, and I completely agree that smart, good people will come to different conclusions. So Charlie Munger has said he's investing in China. He has invested in China. He is defending investing in China. You have also decided that you're cool with that. And I don't know if you've invested, but you're looking at investing in China. And I am coming down on a different side of that decision. But what I really appreciated about what Charlie said, even though he danced around it a lot and it was kind of annoying, he said different people can come to different conclusions about this issue, and I can see where they're coming from. And I think that's what it comes down to. This isn't black or white, as you astutely pointed out. It's something, particularly investing in China, something where a lot of smart people are coming down on one side or the other. And it really is, at the end of the day, a value judgment about one, risk, and about two, what you're okay with your money supporting. And I think, Charlie, as long as you've gone through the thought process that you're talking about, I'm cool with it. Like, I have, it's not just you. I know other investors who are investing in China, and I get it. So
Charlie's sitting here going, oh, you know, I think we should, you cannot, you know, I feel about Russia, what you feel about China. It's a big world. We can all be in it. Kumbaya. And then immediately talks about crypto and says, crypto is beneath contempt.
Yeah.
I love it. So he goes from, hey, we should all just be in this together. You can have your idea. I can have mine. And then over to something that is one of the hottest gambling devices on the planet right now. Somebody asked him about crypto, and he says, it's beneath contempt.
Because those are completely, like, this is like full apples and oranges situation, right? One is entire countries that are treating people terribly in various ways on various levels of the spectrum of terribleness. And the other is a financial instrument. So I have a hard time with comparing.
Well, try this out. It's a financial instrument that's being used in tax evasion. It's being used in kidnapping. It's being used in drug running. I wish they had been banned immediately, is what Charlie says. He says, I admire the Chinese for banning it.
True.
But there's a lot of moral content to that.
Yeah, you're totally right. He actually did make a lot of, yeah.
And so I find it, here's Charlie. You imagine if somebody goes, I think it's beneath contempt to invest in China.
I think he'd be like, I get it. Whoa. No, I genuinely think he'd be like, I get it. I disagree because I think they've done a lot of commendable things. And
I think that's probably true. With Charlie, he's
but I think he
pretty
would
capable
be like,
of
I get it.
Absorbing that. And, yeah. But you had to be pretty rational to absorb that and not feel the emotional content of saying that your investment is beneath contempt.
Yeah.
It's like saying you're beneath contempt a little bit, maybe a lot. So anyway, crypto, he doesn't love crypto. What else?
Okay, we're moving on away from China.
Oh, he's talking about the wretched excess of the past year with Bitcoin, GameStop, AMC, just using the stock market like a gambling parlor.
Yeah. Oh, can we talk about that for a second? Because I highlighted the crap out of that one. I just loved this because this is like, so this being the conundrum between short-term investors and long-term investors being in the same stock market with entirely different points of view, choices, and incentives for making those choices. And I think that this tension is what kept me from being even interested in investing most of my life. I truly think that if there were not this trading culture and the in and out and the like get rich quick and the financial channels and all of that, I think I might have been more interested in talking to you about investing a lot earlier.
Yeah,
because it would have been about true, like, what do you own and what are the products and like what are the companies that you're owning for a long time. That's so, like, obviously that's so much more interesting to me than this like quick stuff. And so what Charlie said about it is that we have a stock market that people use as a gambling partner. And there are people who love that side of the business. And then there are people who want to make long-term investments, take care of their old age, et cetera. And then put that in one market and it goes out of control. So he says, right, if I were the dictator of the world, I would have some kind of tax on short-term gains that made the
reason
stock
it goes
market
out of control
less liquid.
Is that when you have gamblers in there, who are driving a stock and driving momentum on the stock, what happens with people who want to invest for their retirement is they're priced out of the market. And since people can't be priced out of the market because they don't have any option in the way that the Federal Reserve has been handling interest rates, you can't put your money in a bond at, you know, 1.5% per year when inflation is running 7.5%. So, you know, you have to be in the market. And that, with all of this excess gambling and what Charlie calls wretched excess going on, the prices go through the roof. And now you have retirees that have put their money into something that is inevitably going to crash.
Yeah.
And you've set up, he said, the excess in the 1920s gave us a depression because mm-hmm. the excess brought the market to a stupid point where ultimately it has to fail. That gave us the depression, and the depression gave us Hitler.
Yeah.
He says, this is really serious stuff. And it is really serious stuff. The Federal Reserve has created a drunken party by pouring $5 trillion into the economy, helicoptering money to people who have no idea what to do with it, no training in what to do with it, no education whatsoever. They're not listening to this podcast. They just saw their friends make a bunch of money doing GameStop, and they jumped into it. So just no thought to the consequences long term. So how bad this is going to be, we don't know. But it's going to be bad.
But he's so right. One, that yes, that it creates a really bad situation coming down the road. And that there's something they could do about it. Like putting a tax on short-term gains would be the easiest solution ever.
Yeah.
Simple. And
would you want to tax something? Tax
absolutely
that.
Help this problem.
Yeah. Like, all right. Cool.
Hey, done. Good point. He solved it.
Real estate isn't liquid like the stock market, and it doesn't seem to have any trouble. In the long run, you can count on it going up. And I mean, you know, I think it's something to think about there for sure. Very, very.
I don't know. Do you think that could literally happen? Because I think that the lobby of
no chance could that happen
is so strong now because they're making so much money off of people, you know, creating brokerage accounts constantly trading small amounts of money.
So you have all these retail investors that are trading small amounts of money. They would object. Then you have virtually all of the mutual funds out there talk like they're long-term investors.
Right.
Such a lie. Fidelity, Magellan, the average length of time they hold a stock is under 90 days.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like they're trading constantly. Very little long-term hold going on there. And by the way, the game is played by having large pension funds who are dominating the market, right? So you have the California the irony of these large pension funds is, of course, they're all little guy money. This is all little guy money that's dominating mm-hmm. the market. The California mm-hmm. Teachers pension fund is the largest investor in the world, and they pick fund managers. And when they pick a fund manager, they give him $100 million. Hey, mm-hmm. here you go, bud. Mm-hmm. Go for it. And then they watch that guy every month. How you doing? How you doing? How you doing? And the moment he starts to get lower than somebody else, that pension fund manager, the California Teachers Pension Fund, feels it's his obligation to his clients to take his $100 million away from that guy and give it to the guy who's not failing to keep up with the market.
Yep, absolutely.
And that puts everybody on Wall Street on a short-term leash. 1 month, 3 months, a year is forever. Nobody's looking out a year because those pension fund managers aren't looking out a year.
You know, it's
going to take the money away in a quarter.
I don't know why it's like that, because like the it must be something to do with management, because the university endowments don't have that same problem. Like Harvard's endowment and Yale's endowment both had managers that have become famous for being incredible long-term investors and did not have that same in and out situation at all.
They're rare as hen's teeth.
Super rare. And I think it must be something to do with the management, because those institutions have so much power that they are able to hire somebody and say like, okay, you have control over this. Like, we're going to go for a long-term plan. Whereas the more public pension institutions don't have that kind of liberty. I don't know. But it's really interesting, the difference.
And of course, it's evolved into the ETF world, which is now passive investing is now over 50% of the money in the U.S. Mm. stock markets is passively managed, which means that fund manager has gotten away from the problem of beating the market by becoming the market.
Yeah.
And once you've become the market, you don't have any real big problems. You're just going to buy and sell. You buy if the market's going up and you sell if the market's going down. It's that simple. And so, great. Now the pension guys will leave their money with me.
Charlie was asked about passive investing and the problem that if it has created a problem with stock valuations.
And what do you say we pick that one up next time?
Oh,
Whoa. Ooh. Let's leave you guys with something to come back for. Passive investing is a problem or not? Which is it? And probably some of you are very involved in passive investing on your own. Let's take a look at that.
Okay.
Until next time.
Think about the moral values of investing as we go in the next week.
Problem. All right.
Okay.
Until then, time to go play, guys. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important. It's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.